The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
And welcome, everybody, and thank you so much. I always like to recognize the audience, because without you, there would be no show. And I love the idea that each and every week we focus on being intentional. And being an intentional person is, I believe it requires a greater depth within an individual, more than goal setting or vision boards. And all those things are important and significant. But the intentional person continues to move forward, even though they may not see what the future is on the other side of the mountain, even though they might be going through challenges or, you know, crisis at the time or something going on with their family. They continue to move forward with an idea in mind of how they're being guided. And that's what I really enjoyed reading about our guest today, Dr. Greg Hammer. He has so much of credentialing in the medical field and offers hope and inspiration. And with his new book, Gain Without Pain. So he uses the word gain. And I think he's just, well, I'm just really looking forward to what that is and how we know we're going to be better because we spent time with him. Dr. Greg Hammer, thank you for being on our show today. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure being with you.
And you have such a broad background, and I'd love you to take the opportunity, you know, to kind of take us way back, because our show inspires a lot of individuals in high school and in the beginning of college, and they're thinking about, you know, what is it I want to be when I grow up, or you know, or what do I want to be in this second chapter of my life? So take us way back. How did you get involved in this field in the first place?
I was always interested, as of my teenage years at least, in how everything is sort of interrelated. I became very interested in astronomy. Mm-hmm. I spent many hours on the driveway of the home where I grew up outside of Chicago in the winter with below zero temperatures and my telescopes. Those were the nights that the sky was most clear. And I was extremely interested in how the planets related to each other, how the Earth related to the sun and the rest of the solar system, and how our sun is part of a larger entity called the Milky Way galaxy. And the Milky Way galaxy is part of a large cluster of galaxies, and so on and so on. In other words, where the relatively small, and that's us, planet Earth, relate to the relatively infinite, if that's not a non sequitur. But I became interested in astronomy, and then I became interested in human biology for the same reason, and that is that it's fascinating to me how the small becomes the medium size and the large, and how the parts are all interrelated. And when I came to a fork in the road, as Yogi Berra might have said, I took it. I went in the direction of human biology and medicine rather than astronomy, just mainly for pragmatic purposes. There's much more opportunity in the field of human biology and medicine. And when I was in medical school, I found that I had an affinity for people who worked with children. I found that they tended not to take themselves too seriously. That was me as well. So I decided to do a residency in pediatrics. And while I was a resident, I really loved working in the intensive care unit, just the pace, the impact of decisions that are made there. And at that time, the combination of anesthesia and critical care in pediatrics was much more common than it is today. The training has become sort of forebodingly long. But I went into critical care medicine and did a residency in anesthesiology and then fellowships in pediatric intensive care and anesthesiology. And my whole interest in medicine and in fitness in general has really been related to my early interest in the interrelatedness of everything. And in addition to that, I've always been very interested in fitness in the broad sense, physical fitness, spiritual fitness. And so while at Stanford, I became involved in a program called WellMD, which was convened related to the growing tide of burnout among healthcare professionals, physicians in particular, which has really become a crisis even before the pandemic. And I started giving a talk on wellness here and there and what we can do about burnout, and that kind of took a life of its own on. So normally when I'm invited to speak, it's about my research in pharmacology or my clinical practice of pediatric intensive care or cardiac anesthesia, but the wellness thing, I guess, has struck a chord, and as I said, that's kind of taken on a life of its own. I had some sabbatical time, and because my talks on wellness were resonating, I thought, why not write a book? And so that's what I did. And meanwhile, this whole process continues, and here we are together.
Yeah, was the idea of writing a book, was that like something that you had to really work at to grasp, or did it just seem like the next organic phase of the work you're doing to reach more people and to educate them and, you know, that kind of thing?
Absolutely the latter. Yes, I think when I was talking with people, meeting with people, connecting with people, related to burnout and wellness, the message just seemed to resonate. The idea of game sort of, you know, came together, and then I had some sabbatical time, so it just seemed like a very natural progression to write a book about it.
Well, I love the title of the book. It really called me, and it is obviously called the producer that, you know, books the shows, Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. And everyone that's tuning in, I'm talking to Dr. Greg Hammer, and you can go to his website, greghammermd.com. And I love that book. A little side note about me, in my history of being a public person, a speaker, teacher, author, whatever I may think of myself. I was a trainer for a number of years, and I would go into a lot of the medical facilities and the long-term healthcare industries. And I was always so fascinated knowing that they had a lot of things they had to deal with. I mean, just being a caregiver or caretaker is by itself is a real calling. I get all that. But there was, I found that some of the places just really lack joy. You know, they lack that happiness component that you're talking about. One of the places I went with a friend of mine was MD Anderson. And it just had an entirely different vibration, you know, to it, that it was a upbeat in the midst of the sorrow, the pain, the crisis, the, you know, whatever. So anyway, I'm just very, I remember a couple of them I wrote down, please don't ever send me there. You know, it was just didn't have the right kind of energy. So I'm sure that yours is much more intense with you as an educator, but when you say Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals, what share with us, you know, what you can, of course, without giving away the whole book. What are some of the ideas that you're passionate about?
Sure. Well, I certainly don't mind giving away anything related to the book. You know, I think that you talked about happiness and attitude being so important, and your experience at the medical center being upbeat in the face of a lot of pain and suffering. And I think that the pillars of emotional and spiritual well-being just kind of fell into place to form the GAIN acronym. And gratitude is essential. Acceptance, with respect to what you said about a cancer hospital actually having an upbeat and even joyous resonance. Acceptance of pain is essential. Intention is another essential ingredient to happiness, and non-judgment as well. So we can talk about those individually and together. And I think that our basic innate persona really is happiness. And then that happiness gets apparently veiled by our experience. And, you know, we could talk forever about the developing human, both from a biologic and emotional and spiritual point of view. But as we were born, I think we're in a state of relative bliss. If you look at a newborn, they just seem to be present and unaware of time and space. They don't really know where the edge of their hand is and where their mother's breast begins, for example. I think they're just completely present. They're not concerned about being in the uterus an hour ago or where they're going to be tomorrow. And I think that state is one of bliss, actually. And how do we get that back? You know, as we develop, we acquire patterns of thought that are necessary in developing. We have to separate from our mother and father. We have to form our own identity. We have to learn what is mine and what is not mine. And in that process, we tend to define ourselves as a separate self. And I think therein, in general, lies the basis of our apparent unhappiness, that we see that we're separate. We become imbued with a negativity bias. I think the two ways that our brains become wired through experience growing up that interfere with our happiness are, one, we have a negativity bias. We tend to remember the negative and forget about the positive experiences we have. And the second property that interferes with our happiness is that we are relatively fixated on the past and the present. And I would say that we can think of our thoughts of the past and fixated on the past and the future, we could sort of categorize those thoughts as adaptive versus maladaptive. So, for example, when we think about the past, it's adaptive to recognize mistakes that we've made so we don't continue to repeat them and we learn. It's also adaptive to reflect on wonderful, loving times we've had with family and friends. So those are good things to think about, up to a point, of course, with regard to mistakes that we've made. But excessive thinking of the past tends to bring shame, low self-esteem, negative self-judgment. Again, it's the combination of the negativity bias and our relative obsession with thoughts of the past in ways that are maladaptive. And I would say the same for the future. It's adaptive to plan, to put bread on the table. It's adaptive to look forward to good times with loved ones. But beyond that, we tend to obsess on the future, and this brings fear and anxiety. So I think fear, anxiety, shame, self-judgment, these are maladaptive thoughts that we tend to adhere to. And the idea is with GAIN that if we recognize that, we can do something about it. Therein lies the intention. So, for example, Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's one of my heroes and probably the founder of mindfulness, what we call mindfulness-based stress reduction practice. Defined mindfulness as an awareness of the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. And the on purpose means, since we've acquired this negativity bias and this way of thinking obsessively about the past and the future, we need to be purposeful or intentional about changing the way we think and rewiring our brain. And the good news is that our brains have this wonderful quality called neuroplasticity. And so if we are intentional, we can identify the maladaptive ways we tend to think and identify the ways we'd like to think to be more present and positive. We can do it through intention. And so there's hope.
It's so powerful, and it's so wonderful to meet, someone that's so integrated and so highly respected in your field that you are mentioning words like spirituality, like, you know, happiness, like awareness, and, you know, gratitude and things like that. And I know how, you know, people can take one sentence and totally misinterpret it. And I, you know, certainly wasn't referring to that when people walk into a hospital to see their dying mother, that they anticipate disco music and people dancing, you know, or, wow, this is like Disney. Yet there's something about, like you're saying, like the stress often that caregivers are carrying, you know, they can be short and cranky and, you know, and they have all this stuff coming at them. And I can't imagine, I would not be cut out for that. But I, you know, I do multitask a lot as a spiritual leader, and I have various things I'm, you know, balancing at any given moment. And I think the person in front of you, like you're saying, to get back to that childlike nature of regardless of what is, to realize that right now, to just put that aside and be present with the family or the people, you know, that really are seeking that energetic field of hope or just calming or, you know, whatever that may be. I love what you're doing. You must find a tremendous joy from it.
I do. And you know, every morning, my practice is to wake up, open the blinds, even though it's dark out these days when I get up, and do my morning hygiene thing, and then sit and do my gain meditation, which I do every morning. And that practice is basically just a matter of sitting in a comfortable place and getting in touch, noticing the breath, which I think is central to all forms of meditation, and noticing the air coming in through the nose and pausing and then letting the breath go without effort. So we do that a couple of times and then begin to contemplate our gratitude. And one thing that always comes to me during my gratitude contemplation is how privileged it is to be able to serve and help other people, just as you were saying. And, you know, I'm grateful not only for the medical miracle or miracles in my own life, but also for what we can offer our children, patients, and their families, and what a wonderful thing it is to be able to do that. And, you know, a lot of my practice is taking care of children who have serious congenital issues, congenital cardiac disease, or other genetic disorders who one might think would have a rather bleak future. But on the other hand, you know, that's the A in gain is acceptance. And I think that feeling that you got walking into MD Anderson has to do with acceptance, because I think we need to recognize that there's joy and pain in life equally, perhaps. But there doesn't have to be intense suffering. So there's a formula in the book, which is suffering equals pain times resistance. We love formulas in medicine.
Say that again, Greg. Suffering equal, because that was powerful, and I want to make sure that we have that recorded more than once. Suffering equal.
Sure. Pain times resistance.
Got it. Oh, that's on.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a basic fluid dynamic principle that pressure equals flow times resistance. So it's a modification of that, whereby the pain is there. The pain is an inevitable part of life. But when we resist it, and resistance takes many forms, we increase the suffering. So the A in gain is all about letting that resistance go. And that is called acceptance. It's sort of the opposite or converse of resistance. So there's the pain. And as the Serenity Prayer would remind us, there's pain that we can't do anything about. We can't prevent it. We can't necessarily treat it to its full extent. And I think when you walk into a cancer hospital, and you see so many people who are afflicted with terminal illness, that represents a pain that we can't cure in many cases. So the pain is there. How do we deal with it? If we resist it, if we pretend it's not there, if we try not to think about it or talk about it, if we pretend that it's something that it isn't, these are all manifestations of resistance. So in the gain meditation, after we contemplate our gratitude, we transition to acceptance, we understand the pain. We can contemplate a particular event. I lost my 29-year-old boy 4 years ago. So that comes to me first in acceptance. And there's nothing I could do about it. And I just have to accept it. And I just feel the pain coming closer and closer. I actually visualize my chest and my heart opening. And I absorb that pain into my heart until I'm fully merged with it, until there is no resistance. And again, suffering equals pain times resistance means that if we lower the resistance towards zero, the suffering is commensurately lowered towards zero. So the pain is there, and it's how we manage it that really is so important to our emotional and spiritual well-being.
That's really good. So when you're doing your meditation in the morning, how long does it last? Or is it even about time? Maybe it's not. The reason I ask is maybe at some point in the program, you'd like to lead us through something. So that's just a thought,
sure.
You know, that maybe after
break.
I think that would be wonderful if you would be willing, to do that. Have you found, we have about 4 or 5 more minutes. How have you found your book being received by the healthcare professionals? Where is it being promoted and marketed? And, you know, how long have you been on the circuit, as we say in the publicist book business, with your book?
Well, the book was published a little over a year ago, and I think the reception has been, to my mind, surprisingly wonderful. I mean, I wrote it just to get the message out there, and I think it's being incredibly well received by people in the healthcare profession and outside of the healthcare profession. The message is really applicable to all of us, but not limited to healthcare professionals. It's just that the stories in the book have to do with healthcare and medicine, but I think anybody can relate to them. I've been really delighted at the reception and the opportunity to speak with people like you and your listeners. And it's just been, there's a bit of a crescendo involved. It seems to be getting more and more, the message is more and more resonant. And I think reaching more people, which is really something that makes me very happy. I had a friend that I don't know very well, who asked if she could bring the book over to have me sign it for her brother. It turns out her brother lives in Texas, and his psychotherapist recommended that he read it. So that was a surprise to me that a therapist in Texas read it and recommended for her patient. So anyway, it's a very humbling experience, but I'm very delighted at the way that the book, and more importantly, the message has been received.
It's just awesome. And so very little resistance then. I mean, as they say, it's hard to teach a dog new tricks. I have one of those. And so the people, the individuals in the healthcare industry that have been doing it for years and years and years, are they resisting, or do they go, this is just what I've been looking for? Wow, this is going to change the way we're doing things now. Or what are you finding in that regard?
I think it's important in the context of healthcare to consider what are the elements that drive burnout, and therefore what are the paths to solution. And at the Well and Be program, there's a beautiful icon, if you will. It's a rubric of how we at the Well and Be Center see the issues related to professional fulfillment. So if you can imagine a pie cut in thirds, the drivers of burnout and the potential cures to burnout involve first in the one third of the pie is really the culture of medicine. So I think for until recently, the culture has not been that healthy. It's changing slowly, but for example, if a physician needs psychological help, that's been kind of stigmatized, as one can easily imagine. There's been sort of a hierarchy, you know, it's a bunch of middle-aged white men running the show, or older white men. That's changing. So the culture is extremely important. And so no matter how resilient we are, if the culture is really unfavorable, we're going to be unhappy working within it. The second third of the pie is efficiency of practice. And that means things like, you know, if I'm working in the operating room and we just don't have enough technicians and there's a long turnover between cases and I'm ending up spending an hour and a half in the hospital in addition to what I think is necessary every day. Again, it doesn't matter how resilient I am. If I'm working in a very inefficient system that prevents me from having dinner with my family and making events for my kids and so on, it's going to be hard to be happy. So we have the culture, we have efficiency of practice, and then the third domain is my main area of interest, and that's
we're gonna hold on to that thought, Greg, as they've
sure.
We got the music playing on you, then we'll start out with that. When we come right back after this short break, everyone, go to GregHammerMD.com. Thank you for joining us.
Practical spirituality. Positive messages. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much. We're just having we're learning today. We're just having a great conversation with Dr. Greg Hammer and his wonderful book, Gain Without Pain, the Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. And I'm going to go ahead and put it out there that, you know, this book is applicable to your personal life, your family life, your interaction with kids and children and teenagers. If you're in another caregiving profession, it certainly is applicable. The four pillars, gratitude, awareness, intention, and non-judgment, promoting well-being. And that is, I think, it's a great call. It's a great passion of mine that in any role that you put a business card or a certificate in front of your name or behind it, there needs to be some level of modeling about what it is that you represent. And so, I was just very excited to have him and his work and what he stands for. And you'll see that he is a very healthy human, and he's actually happy when you look at his photo. Greg, have you ever heard the story about John Lennon? It's one of my favorite stories, and it's very quick about happiness.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Okay, it's very quick. John Lennon, his mother taught him as a little boy that the secret to life is happiness. And so he had that in his energy field. He was bombarded with that. John, the secret of life is happiness. And so when he went to school, his teacher gave them assignments to answer the question, what is the secret of life? And he wrote happiness. And she said, you don't understand the assignment. And he told his teacher, you don't understand life. Love that.
That's great. Yeah, just, love that too.
Just a great, beautiful, beautiful story. So I'm grateful for the work you're doing and the influence that you have with children and with the youth. And, you know, people say they're our future. Well, no, they really are now. They are contributing on many different levels to where we are right now. And we want to value them as not only what we're influencing with them, but the teaching that they're bringing. I mean, the kids now, they are so amazing. And just say the most profound things. My little goddaughter told me the other day, she said, I don't want to be named Miracle. I don't want you to call me Miracle anymore. I went, well, gosh, dear, that's such a beautiful name. I mean, I know I would love it because it would remind me if I'm kind of off track, you know, that we'll look for a miracle. And she said, I want to be called Karma. You know, and she'd pick that up and no, I want my name to be Karma. But I said, well, do you know what karma means? Because, you know, I didn't want to make her wrong or, you know, whatever. And she's just turned six. And so I'm like, do you know what karma means? And then I explained it to her. She said, oh, okay. And so she didn't bring that up anymore. But oh, they're so good for us. And they keep us healthy inside our heart and keep our heart open, you know, more so. But we were talking about before we went to break, how's your work being accepted by the diehards or by the box thinkers, by the, well, I've always been this way I do it and this is how it is. How is that going for you?
Well, as I was explaining, you know, in the WellMD Center, we have this rubric whereby the keys to professional and personal fulfillment include the culture, in this case, the culture of medicine, efficiency of practice, and the third domain is personal resilience. So it's important as I talk to physicians that they understand I'm not saying that we just need to be personally more resilient and everything will be okay. No, there have to be changes in those other two domains as well. That is the culture of medicine and efficiency of practice. So, you know, it's not personal resilience doesn't cure everything. You know, if somebody is driving a nail through your foot, no matter how resilient you are, it's going to present a problem. So, but again, we can only do what we can do. And again, I think that is where the importance of discerning between that we can change and that we cannot change. So we as physicians and healthcare providers more broadly can change the culture of medicine. And I think it is happening. Had our department faculty meeting yesterday, and we have a very strong directive in LGBTQ rights and how can we do better? How can we be completely accepting and not have any microaggressions in our department toward faculty or patients, et cetera? And this is a really important directive. And so the culture is changing. And we can all pitch in. And similarly with efficiency, you know, efficiency at work, efficiency in the hospital and clinic, we do have to band together and try to help the administrators and leadership understand what the issues are. But the thing we can do every day and we have total control over is our own resilience. And so I do have to kind of put that in perspective and context. I'm not telling anybody that all you have to do is be more resilient and everything will be rosy. But again, let's do what we can do as individuals and you know, go from there. And that's really the message. And we can do a lot. The good news is, although there are some challenging ways that our brains appear to be wired by the time we reach adulthood, the good news is that our brains remain open and neuroplastic, meaning that through intention, we can actually change the way we think to be more positive and more present. So I think that message does resonate with everybody.
Yeah, and you're up against the same kind of thing that I am in my work, is, you know, being a difference maker and you know, writing about the depth of shamanic practitioner work, about, you know, ancient teaching of getting back to nature and what's natural, and, you know, living in a both and world, not an either or. I mean, we are so bombarded with either or, and you can't be in the middle, you know, and those kind of things. And so because I represent, you know, radical positivity, then people run around going, well, you know, oh, you're saying it's wrong to be negative. No, nobody's saying that. You know, you don't see some of the things happening to kids and what people are doing from time to time and go, oh, let's just be positive. This isn't cliche and, you know, platitude and kumbaya land, but it's the fact that in the midst of those things, you're not saying they don't exist as a dark or shadow experience, but within that, there's a looking for or anticipating that within that, on the other side, there's going to be some sense of betterment, like you're saying, that you have this feeling of influence as a person, and you can be the CNA, you can be the DON, you can be the doctor of a whole wing, and one space of attitude, one space of how someone interacts with you may change the course of their lives. It may be the difference between suicide and a lifetime of willing to change who they are, you know, that kind of thing. And because that's the thing. It's like, I remember as a speaker when I traveled abroad and traveled in the States, you know, that would be one of the comments they would make is, I just can't believe, you know, she's so happy. And, you know, I thought, well, how sad, you know, I mean, where are we headed? You know, there's this level of inner happiness, and you nailed it, because that's how I believe is when joy, and you said pain, I said grief, when joy and grief are married and they hold hands through life, that's where your inner happiness lies, is right there. And I love that. And I love that you're teaching this in areas and places within the world that people can really benefit deeply, you know, for sure. And we were talking about, and I would have gone this whole hour without bringing up this word, because I'm kind of tired of talking about it, and I don't really bring it up on the show. It's not politics, that's for sure. But COVID, you know, and we were talking about how, you know, I found one time in my, so I'm curious as to what you think, and then lead us through a meditation or more about your book. But now that I have you, this expert that you are, I want to ask you this, that I found one time in my 30s, I took a time out, first time in my life that I hadn't been employed or reporting somewhere or having all of the life's external distractions. And I tell you, Greg, I went into so much analyzing, so much pondering, and so much thinking about things that, I mean, I went like, I think, oh, I know this is what people talk about being depressed. I need to get back into life. And are you finding that because so many people have had timeouts, and yes, I understand there's lots of success stories about it, but there's almost like this intensity and aggravation because most people are call life their distractions, and I'm not making that wrong, but they don't have as many distractions as they once did. So it seems there's more anger and frustration and, you know, whatever. So what do you think about that?
Do you mean with respect to the pandemic?
Yeah, and people's lives changing so much in ways that they are absolutely in no control at all.
Sure. Well, you know, we talk about burnout and how burnout has been part of the pandemic, if you will. Burnout is a state of physical and emotional exhaustion related to chronic stress. And I think that, again, we can talk about stress as being adaptive or maladaptive. Acute stress can be adaptive. So when you're having a party in the backyard and there's a swimming pool and you hear a splash and where's the toddler, and you realize that the toddler has fallen into the swimming pool, you're going to get a surge of adrenaline or epinephrine. Your heart rate and blood pressure are going to go up. Your cortisol is going to go up. Your blood sugar will go up. And these things prepare you for reacting quickly and jumping in the pool and rescuing that toddler, for example. So you know, that's an example where acute stress is adaptive. But when that state of stress lasts for days, weeks, months, or even years, it has a number of very adverse effects on our health, you know, on our blood pressure, on our heart function, on predisposing us to diabetes, on suppressing our immunity, actually interfering with our sleep. And then you get into this sort of positive feedback loop or self-propagating situation where you're not sleeping well, so you're tired. And then when you're tired, and this is certainly true, like in medicine, in the hospital, you have physicians who've been on call or aren't sleeping well, and then families give a box of seized candies out of their gratitude. And so you end up picking up one of those or maybe more than one. And so we're tired, we're going for sugary or fatty, so-called comfort foods, which may provide a very temporary boost. But in general, our diet suffers and our exercise regimen often kind of goes down the tubes. And this all feeds back into itself with our sleep, exercise, nutrition, and chronic stress. So I think that life itself is stressful. And that's what we're really talking about, is how do we let go of that stress and sink into our hearts and our natural state of happiness. But life itself is a stress. And you superimpose upon that some natural disaster. You know, I was thinking of the people in Haiti who had their president assassinated and then had a horrific earthquake, and so many people were sleeping out in the street because their homes were destroyed, and then they got a hurricane. So it was just sheets of rain coming down on these poor people who were huddled together outside. And so you superimpose on the chronic stress of life some natural disaster like that for the COVID pandemic and all of the myriad of additional stresses that that superimposes on the baseline stress of life. And of course, you're going to have a lot more exhaustion and burnout. And so, you know, all the more reason for us to look to each other to develop ways of becoming more personally resilient. And as I said, you know, the good news is that is accessible to us if we use our purposefulness or intention.
That's very true. And really, you know, as I look at, you know, your four: gratitude, awareness, intention, and non-judgment. I mean, that is really not with the intention of trying to make this a spiritual movement, but that is truly the unity teaching in every sense. And that creates a sense of unity regardless of who you are and what you belong to. You know, I mean, these will make great programs and classes for children as well. And I know that you're a component of meditation, and that's what's exciting, is starting to see meditation taught in prisons, starting to see meditation taught in the elementary schools, and the breathing techniques with the, you know, kindergarten and pre-K. It's really cool what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of people have the wrong idea about meditation. Maybe they were taught or told that you had to sit possibly in an uncomfortable position for 30 minutes and banish all thoughts from your mind. And, you know, those are all stigmata, but none of them are true. They're not intrinsic to meditation. You know, the game meditation, for example, can be done in as little as 3 minutes, and basically just involves finding a comfortable place to sit in any position. I would generally advise against lying down because people may fall asleep, but sitting in a comfortable place, in a comfortable chair, in a quiet room, and can be as little as 3 minutes. And the issue about not having thoughts, of course, all forms of meditation, you know, we no matter what meditation we're doing, we tend to have thoughts. And I think the important point is not feeling as though we failed if we're having thoughts, but rather not getting overly attached to our thoughts, just kind of being the observer of them. And it's partly why I made this practice, devised the game practice as being contemplative. So I'm actually offering thoughts rather than telling you not to have them. So it's a contemplation. And over time, people can do it for longer. They can reinterpret what the elements of gain mean, of course. So what I offer is just kind of a starting point. And I think it's really important to have a daily practice also, rather than rely on that week of vacation every 3 to 6 months. We all know that when we come back from vacation, the benefits seem to dissipate very quickly. But a daily practice, albeit brief, can really be the opening of a door to a more evolved, committed, really wonderful practice. So it's just a starting point. So would you like to go through that? Would you like, shall we do a brief meditation?
I very much. We have like 7 minutes, and I think that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll just do a 3 minute or so meditation. And so I would just ask you, listeners, excuse me, to sit comfortably and close their eyes and begin to just let their muscles relax. Rest your arms on the armrest or on the tabletop and just sort of feel the muscles in the body, in the neck, the scalp, down the back, and down through the torso and legs. Just relax and notice the breath. Notice the air coming into the body through the nose. Perhaps slow that down a bit. Take a slow inhalation to a count of three. Pause to a count of three. And then just notice the effortless nature of the exhalation, perhaps to a count of four. Just noticing the breath in and hold and relaxing and letting it go. And then we think about our gratitude and how wonderful it is to be here right now. When I was diagnosed with a blood cancer called CLL about 10 years ago, I didn't think I would be alive today. And fast forward, and I take an immunotherapy pill once a day, and there's no evidence of disease in my body. And so that's one of the things for which I'm most grateful. But we can be grateful for the health and wealth that we have. We can focus on what we have rather than what we don't have as we breathe, and the gratitude of the community that we have that we enjoy right here, right now. We can be grateful for our loved ones, for our friends, for our ability to laugh. And let's just be grateful for this day. We transition to acceptance, and acceptance means we acknowledge that there's pain in life. So we can focus on something painful, and as we breathe slowly in and pausing and out, we feel that pain, that painful experience or thought coming closer and closer, and we open our chest and feel our heart opening and bring that pain into our heart. Let that pain merge with our heart until there's no separation. And as I said, I lost my boy at the age of 29 4 years ago, so that pain is always there. But as I bring it slowly closer and into my heart, I accept it fully, and so I no longer suffer from that event and that reality. And we all have pain. It's part of life. We all share this. Let's embrace it. And we transition to intention, the I in gain. And knowing that we have this wonderful quality of being purposeful, so we can actually rewire the way we think to be more positive and more present. And it's been shown that just thinking of three good things in the evening before we prepare to go to bed, three good things that happened during the day. We do this nightly, takes no time. It actually helps us sleep, and it makes us happier. And that's been shown, and that's a great example of intention. We all have this ability to be purposeful about the way we experience life and the way we think through our intention. So let's think of three good things, and let's vow to be more present and focus on what we have rather than what we don't have. We can overcome that negativity bias. And we transition to non-judgment. And, you know, we're always comparing ourselves to other people and others to others and things in our environment. It's the way our mind works. But we don't have to do that. We don't have to think of the other person being smarter than I am or I'm more beautiful than that person. Let's just let it be. Let's totally accept what is. So I picture the Earth, a beautiful image, maybe a NASA image of the Earth, just suspended in space. It's neither good nor bad. We don't have to affix a label to it. It simply is the Earth that it is. And similarly, we are the person that we are. We are neither good nor bad. We can think, I am exactly who I am. I am neither good nor bad. And we can drop the self-judgment and the judgment of others and the world around us. And we return to the breath. Slowly taking the breath in to a count of three, pausing to a count of three, and then letting it go very slowly, without effort, to a count of four. And we repeat this cycle of noticing the breath. And then we slowly open our eyes, and here we are out in the world, ready to dedicate ourselves to going back to this practice of gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment as we drive to work, as we walk down the hall, as we sit down for a meal. And, you know, I think it will make us all more resilient and happier people.
Oh, that is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you for that.
Yeah, again, just a 3-minute practice every morning and you know, maybe take one of those elements and make a special commitment to that. So today I'm going to be non-judgmental. So when we're driving to work after we do our gain meditation and somebody cuts us off a bit on the road without using their turn signal and we start to formulate all these judgments, we can kind of have a bit of a laugh at ourselves and remember that we pledge to be, to drop the judgments, to be non-judgmental of the first person that we found ourselves being aggravated with. So you can take these elements and just, you know, incorporate them into your mindset during the day. And I think the more you do this, just even 3 minutes every morning, after a few months, you look back and realize how much your thought process has changed. And in fact, yes, I am happier.
Yeah, I love the four. I love the quadrant model. Because that's true for, you know, life. When people say, well, I'm spiritual, it's like, well, that's wonderful, whatever that, you know, one word indicates, but yet you're also physical, you know, and you're also mental and you're also emotional. And so it's all four of those things. And I just love the energy of the words that you've used in the acronym GAIN, because yeah, it's wonderful to write your list and say the things you're thankful for. But without the awareness and the intention and the, how am I adjusting in everyday life with my judgment? I mean, you know, gratitude is nice, but it becomes cliche, kind of like, oh, I'm so thankful, you know, versus more integrated. So anyway, my hat goes off to you, Dr. Greg Hammer. You've done an excellent job. Everyone, you can tune in to Greg Hammer, MD. .com for his website and learn more about him and get his wonderful book. It's just been a delight having you on the show today. I really love the work you're doing, and keep on going, Greg. Keep on going.
Thank you, Temple. It's been wonderful to be with you. Would love to come back sometime.
No, we'd love to have you. You just tell Steve or Angela to book you again. We really need to do that in 2022 because we fill up fast, and who knows what book you'll have out by then. Okay, or you don't even need one. We'll just talk about the quadrant.
All right, Temple. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye bye. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Dr. Mona Lisa, and I've been a medical intuitive for over 30 years. Let me help you find new ways to heal physical and emotional problems. be a part of my Healthy Living Intuitively podcast studio audience every week. Follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mona Lisa fan page, and Instagram, Dr. Mona Lisa 1, to get that information. I answer audience questions, and you can learn from people calling in that might be dealing with the same things that you are. Follow Healthy Living Intuitively, part of the mindbodyspirit.fm podcast network, and wherever you get your podcasts.